Next, I'm going to introduce Shalini Ayagari. We'll give her a moment to get set up here. And she is a PhD candidate in ethnomusicology at the University of California, Berkeley. So she's used to all this nice weather we're having in this area of the country. She recently returned from 20 months of fieldwork in Rajasthan, India, where she conducted dissertation fieldwork with the help of a Fulbright grant and also an ARSC research grant. She is currently writing her dissertation on a hereditary musician community and their use of development discourse and institutionalization to create a contemporary movement of social and cultural reclamation. Among other things, she will explore ways in which audio and video recordings can encourage and inspire younger generations to learn older repertoires. And her paper today is going to be about a new way of learning, the use of audiovisual media in musical learning in Rajasthan, India.
Thank you. Just give me 1 second to set it up here. There we go. The title of my talk today is A New Way of Learning, the Use of Audio-Visual Media and Musical Learning Among the Manganiya Musician Community of Rajasthan, India. Here is how the game is played. A Manganiya musician sits in the middle of his patron's homestead, surrounded by male members of the patron family who are familiar with the musical repertoire of the Manganiya musical tradition. The musician has already hidden a trivial object, often a small clay pot, in a hiding place somewhere on the premises. The musician then leads the patron to the hidden object in a sort of hot and cold game. However, the directions given to the patron are not communicated through the words hotter and colder, but are instead conveyed through music. The musician uses the 6 musical ragas, or musical modes, customarily used in performance by the Manganiya, which in their conceptualization correspond to the 4 cardinal directions of north, south, east, west, along with upwards and downwards, respectively, charted here. The game takes musical expertise on the parts of both the musician and his patron. The musician must not only know the 6 ragas intimately, but also must be able to skillfully transition from one raga to the next as the patron moves in various directions. The patron must also have critical listening skills, being able to recognize the musical ragas being played and translate them into the correct directions to follow in order to find the hidden object. The game is called Kakadi and is customarily played at patron family functions such as weddings and birth ceremonies in Western Rajasthan. Like many customs among the Manganiya community, Kakadi is becoming less prevalent as recent generations of musician and patron lack the skills and interest in musical knowledge to be able to play the game. These days, patrons often have to ensure that a very old member of their family who is familiar with the game is present at functions where the game is played. However, I can imagine a time in the near future where the game can no longer be played at all due to lost knowledge and repertoire among the Manganiya community. Between 2005 and 2007, I spent 20 months conducting my PhD dissertation fieldwork in Rajasthan, India, among the Manganiya hereditary musician community, located mainly in the districts of Jaisalmer and Barmer in western Rajasthan. And here we have a map of the region. In the lower right-hand corner is a map of India and the location of Rajasthan, which is the yellow box, and then a larger map of Rajasthan. And Jaisalmer and Barmer are right on the Pakistan border in the Thar Desert in western Rajasthan. During that time, I received an ARSC research grant to conduct a project having to do with Manganiya musical repertoire. I spent 2 concentrated intensive weeks each with 4 musicians commonly considered to be elder master musicians in the community: Hukum Khan, Sakar Khan, Hakim Khan, and Rane Khan. In addition to many other meetings, interviews, and recording sessions with these same musicians throughout my time in Rajasthan. During those 8 weeks, I recorded at length both video and audio recordings of the span of these 4 musicians' traditional repertoire. I also interviewed them about their own musical processes, where and how they learned their music, the intricacies of the raga and song systems, and how they see the future of Manganyar music progressing. In general, those musicians who play kamaicha, an instrument I will discuss later, are generally considered to be the most knowledgeable musicians, having spent years learning to play the instrument. And 3 out of the 4 musicians that I worked with are master kamaicha players. As members of an age-old musical patronage tradition, these 4 men are hereditary caste musicians. They are hereditary musicians in that they have been affiliated not only with individual patron families, but entire family lineages over many generations through social and economic codependence. They are caste musicians in that it is their community's job to provide family genealogies and ceremonial music to their patrons. These days, many Manganyars have taken on other professions, but historically, every male from the community was a professional musician. Patrons inherit the right and obligation to the services of the Manganyar, and the Manganyar also inherit the patronage rights and obligations to specific patrons. The first clip I would like to play is of one of these 4 revered musicians, Hakim Khan. He's a kamaicha player and is known for his large body of birth song repertoire. This clip is a song that is sung at the birth of a son. And you'll excuse me, I have to find the clip here. Okay. In order to have an understanding of the musical changes taking place and the loss of repertoire at hand, one must have a foundation of how Manganyar repertoire historically functioned and what it consisted of. The following information is based upon my interviews with the 4 key musicians I worked with. The Manganyar repertoire is customarily determined by performance contexts, which can be broken down into 2 broad categories, functional music and non-functional music. The music with a function is called chota geet, or small songs. They have a function in that they are performed at their patrons' life cycle ceremonies and can thus be divided into 3 categories, janam, padan, and maran, birth, marriage, and death. These small songs are fairly simple, are often derived from women's repertoire, and pertain to the life cycle function at hand. The following is an example of one of these small songs. This is Rane Khan, one of the 4 musicians I worked with, performing a song called Ambavari, a small song performed at weddings as the bride is leaving her village with the groom and his family after the ceremony. It is characteristically a small song in that it is functional in relation to the wedding ceremony, has no improvisation, and has a repeating refrain. Context, non-functional music does not pertain to life cycle ceremonies directly, although these songs are often performed there. They are called mota geet, or big songs, and are performed at intimate connoisseur listening sessions. Mota geet are often instrumental, mainly kamaicha, and if there is a song text, it usually refers to historical and mythological figures, like patrons, kings, and gods. It could also be a praise song, love song, or a song based upon a raga. Big songs begin with a couplet commonly called doha, which is also the introductory part of the song. It is non-metered and not accompanied by drum. The main body of the song that follows is called the geet, or the song. The percussion accompaniment starts at the beginning of the geet. Vocal embellishments are prevalent during the geet, and textual repetition of phrases is a common feature. I'd like to play a short clip to demonstrate these mota geet, or big songs. This clip is of Hakim Khan. According to him, he is one of the only musicians left in the Manganyar community who can play kamaicha and sing together well. In this clip, he is performing what he considers to be one of the oldest songs existing in the Manganyar repertoire. Hakim was very happy to have the opportunity to play such songs, songs most of his patrons don't care to hear anymore. He is accompanied by the dholak, a double-headed drum, which is off camera. These days, Huckam has been having a difficult time making a living, and in his words, has resorted to playing for tourists to make ends meet. You'll see him in a later clip in that context. In this clip, you'll first hear the Doha section, where Huckam sings a poetic text accompanied by Kamaicha. This will flow into the geet, or the song, when the Dolok drum starts to play. The clip then fades out and fades in again approximately 20 minutes later, so you can hear the end of the performance. The powerful forces of modernization are creating tensions that seem to be modulating traditional lifestyle so crucial for this musical life. Interestingly, and for diverse sociological reasons, mainly beyond the scope of this paper, musicians continue to maintain their patronage ties. While younger musicians still perform for patrons as their fathers and grandfathers did, their repertoire and instrumentation are changing. Their livelihoods are no longer dependent on their span of traditional repertoire in relation to diverse ragas and community songs, but instead, they often perform both international hits and Bollywood film songs. I believe that this is happening in part because younger musicians do not have access to older repertoire transmitted from their elders, as musicians once did. There are, of course, other factors at work here. For example, patrons would rather hear popular songs than traditional repertoire, and increased exposure to Indian and international popular culture through television, radio, and travel. I'd like to play a short clip to demonstrate these outside influences. It is a clip of a young Manganiya boy singing an Indian Bollywood film song. I had asked him to perform older, more traditional repertoire and named off to him some songs I had heard from older musicians. He wasn't able to sing these songs, and after many refusals, he told me that he could sing any Bollywood film song I asked him to sing. He proceeded to sing Kajarare, a song that was extremely popular at the time of this recording from the hit film Bunty Aur Babli. In this clip, listen for his strong, robust lyrical style and very clear enunciation, a style very different from customary Manganiya musical practice and characteristic of much Bollywood singing. My research stint in India in 2005, Huckam Khan approached me at a chance meeting in New Delhi, where I was attending a concert put on for international audiences by a select group of Manganiya performers. I had met Huckam Khan on previous short research trips to Rajasthan. However, this meeting was different. With an urgency I had never before felt in this calm, subdued older musician, he asked me if I would record his music for him. He told me how important the Kamaicha is to the Manganiya music tradition, and that not many musicians played it anymore. The Kamaicha is a stringed instrument unique to the Manganiya community. He told me that there were so many ragas and songs that he knew, and no matter how hard he tried, it was virtually impossible for the younger generations of musicians to learn the entirety of this vast body of knowledge through him. He was asking me for my help to record some of what he considers to be the last remains of a tradition that will virtually die out with him if nothing is done. Together, Hukkum Khan and I conceived of a project through which younger musicians in the Manganir community would be able to have access to the recordings I made of four key musicians to listen to and learn from. I received an ARSC research grant for this project, which covered my travel and accommodation, honorarium for the four musicians, and distribution costs. These days, younger Manganir musicians have access to CD players. I distributed copies of CDs to various younger Manganir musicians throughout both Jaisalmer and Barmer districts. I am also in the process of setting up a few listening and viewing stations, televisions, DVD players, and CD players, at a central music institute that most musicians from the community visit at least once every few months. There, musicians will have direct access to the recordings, and we will be able to learn to operate the equipment on their own, choosing the specific repertoire they would like to watch or listen to. My hopes are that the project will create an empowering environment in which younger musicians who do not have direct relationships with older musicians, or perhaps do not have the desire to learn music in a traditional manner, can absorb old repertoire through a fairly new medium to them, recordings. As Rajasthani folk music has become quite popular all over the world in recent years, with the help of such films as Lacho Drome and more recently Gypsy Caravan, also Rajasthani ensembles that are touring the world, and extensive professional audio recordings of Rajasthani folk music, it is surprising to me that more academic studies pertaining to these musical traditions have not been conducted. Perhaps it is less surprising to me that Manganir musicians were never given copies of the many recordings and movies that feature them and their music. Another goal of this project has been to give musicians their music in a tangible form of the CD or a DVD. For younger musicians especially, this seems to be an important part of a sort of pride felt in being a musician, having tangible results besides money of their musical accomplishments and talent. Until recently in the Manganir community, music was never taught in a formal setting. Children learn from imitating and watching their older family members and accompanying them to patronage functions. And by children, I mean boys. Girls are not taught music and don't perform publicly. This next clip features Sakar Khan Manganir, one of the four musicians I worked with, and his two sons, Gaver Khan and Dada Khan. Sakar Khan is known in the Manganir community for his vast musical knowledge and traditional teaching style. Manganir musicians from all over Western Rajasthan have sent their children to live with his family and learn music from him personally. While this clip does not directly demonstrate the traditional teaching style, it does show how Sakar Khan does not teach by telling his students how and what to play, but instead teaches by example. Notice how his two sons on either side of him, who are both grown men and have been playing Kamaicha for years, still watch his playing and learn from him. And this clip is actually from a DVD that I helped produce and did most of the filming for, if I can get it to work. Thank you. In the past 10 years, with the influence of concert touring abroad, mainly in Europe and North America, and an influx of both domestic and foreign cultural tourism in Western Rajasthan, there have been significant changes in this customary learning process. In my fieldwork, I witnessed a more standardized mode of performance as a result of increased institutional spaces. A few key musicians in the Manganir community have founded schools for Manganir boys to learn both a traditional school education, reading, writing, and math, and music. As a result, children are now often taught performance in a formal setting, a teacher with a class of young Manganir boys. In these classes, children are no longer being taught how to perform for traditional patrons, but are instead taught how to perform in front of foreign audiences. One resourceful and successful Manganir musician, Ghazi Khan, has started a school in his village, Barna, and this is a picture of the institute. Here, young boys are taught by a select group of musicians who have had a prolific career touring abroad. These new learning environments have caused a great deal of musical change. In terms of repertoire, in the new schools, certain songs taught to children are given emphasis that appeal to more international and less musically knowledgeable audiences, while other songs that require specialist knowledge are forgotten and not passed down to children in the community. This is not to say the results of modernization are black and white, good and bad. While there has been a loss of repertoire and an overall homogenization of musical practices, in many ways, these schools are a key factor in keeping Manganir musical traditions alive. In recent times, traditional patronage ties are becoming weaker, and patrons often do not have the means nor impetus to support musicians. Most of the above-mentioned schools are funded by foreign donors, usually people met while Manganirs tour abroad or tourists traveling through Western Rajasthan. These schools enable children who would have otherwise not attended any school to have the opportunity to gain an education in both literacy and music. Without this opportunity, many Manganir children would otherwise choose other professions outside of music, like carpentry or farming. I'd like to play a short clip of Ghazi Khan's two sons performing for one of his school's foreign donors, who happened to be the Duchess of Portugal's daughter, in Barna village. She was invited to the village to see the school, have a traditional village experience, and a personal concert put on by children from the school. It was at night and there was no electricity in the village, so I apologize for the visual quality of the clip, but I hope you can see what's going on. Notice the singing style and hand choreography of the boy on the right, a style that has recently begun to be taught formally to children to make their performances more dynamic and interesting for foreign audiences. Instrumentation has also changed with musical education formalization. The kamaicha, an instrument completely unique to the Manganir community, is not prevalently played anymore, requiring years of study and learning. Instead, musicians play the harmonium, a much more versatile, readily available, and easily played instrument. Emphasis is now placed on percussion as well. Many performances incorporate jugalbandi, which in North Indian classical music is a sort of musical call and response between two soloists. In this case, it is a rhythmic pattern played by the dholak drum and the karthal, a type of wooden castanets. Recent performance contexts also feature much larger musician ensembles. There's a picture of the karthal. Historically, a Manganir performed by singing, accompanying himself on kamaicha with a dholak to keep the rhythm, as you saw and heard in the first clip of Hukkum Khan. In recent times, with the influence of Manganir schools, tourism, and foreign touring, larger ensembles are preferred, showcasing a variety of instruments. One of many newly introduced innovations has been the Desert Symphony, a large group of musicians and dancers all on stage performing together. I'd like to now play a clip of an example of this Desert Symphony performed at the annual Tourist Desert Festival held in Jaisalmer City in 2007. It's a clip that demonstrates this call and response pattern between dholak and karthal. Ghazi Khan, the founder of the school mentioned above, stands in front of the performance troupe and conducts them, telling who to play and when to play. Part of the spectacle is the groups of musicians playing the same instruments, choreographing and playing in sync with each other. Notice the much larger group compared to that of the previous clips and the ostentatious performance style of all the musicians. Is of the Desert Symphony from a concert the year before in 2006. The conductor, Ghazi Khan, was touring in Paris at the time and had his younger brother, Talib Khan, conduct. The views of the audience, all the standing people, gives you an idea of the domestic tourist audience, what they expect in a cultural tourism performance, and how it is much more interactive than for foreign audiences. Not only is it more interactive, but there are definite caste-class dynamics going on here. The musicians are no longer on stage, but are sitting in the sand while the audience stands around them, throwing money on the ground in front of them, and often kicking sand all over them. The song that they are performing is Meri Lal Path, a song that is always requested by domestic tourists, and one that they expect to hear from the Manganiyar, even though it's not even in the Manganiyar repertoire, and is actually a Qawwali song from Pakistan. Also, notice the sitting Kamaicha player to the left of the group in the pink turban. That's Hakim Khan from a previous clip and one of the four musicians I worked with, now grumpily playing for Taurus. Project has not been to discourage Manganiyar musicians from performing popular repertoire. By making audio recordings of traditional repertoire available to younger musicians in an innovative form, I believe that they will be encouraged to learn this older repertoire and ragas. In turn, they will continue the tradition of performing these songs while maintaining more recent practices of performing popular international hits and Bollywood songs. I plan to return to Rajasthan this coming summer to set up listening and viewing equipment and assess the impact and results of the CDs I distributed among the community last year. According to Hakim Khan, if one young musician learns one old song as a result of this project, then the goal has been accomplished. Thank you.
Besides the four musicians that I work with. So that's something that I'm going to be probably dealing with this summer. I collected close to 100 hours of video footage, and it's all amazing. I would be more than happy to share it, but I have to deal with some of the distribution issues. But it's something that I'm working on eventually after I finish my dissertation.
Tom? later, then of course there's the question of preservation. Have you deposited these in an archive fund? Are you working with Rupayan?
I'm working with Rupayan Sons Fund. I'm also working with ARCE, all these acronyms I'm getting mixed up, in New Delhi, part of the University of Chicago. So I deposited all my recordings there as well.
Great, because I think the wonderful novel would be even more important, perhaps.
And I'm also getting involved, I'm a depositor for the AVR archives as well, so I'm working with that project as well. So, yes.
Yeah. I was in Rajasthan a little while ago, filming for television, and one thing that we noticed is that people naturally acted quite differently in front of the camera, and it was very difficult to get them in a more natural setting. And I'm wondering, did you encounter that problem, and did you, try to get them to act more naturally, or were they better when they were in camera?
I think that brings up a lot of kind of ethnographic insider-outsider questions. I think just the fact that I was around, even if the camera wasn't on, they were performing. But these musicians by nature are performers. They're very dynamic, very charismatic, even when I was kind of off in the corner in the dark and seeing them talk to one another and just with their patrons personally. They have kind of these dynamic, charismatic personalities that are very strong and very colorful and are always on from what I saw of them. So it's not something that I really took into consideration because I feel like just me being there would probably bring that out in them. So, I did spend a lot of time with these musicians with the camera off. I was there for 20 months though, and I didn't start filming until 6 or 7 months into my fieldwork. So I kind of spent some time with them for them to get used to me, for me to get used to them before I even brought out the camera. But I guess that's not something that I really took into consideration. I mean, part of what I'm looking at is kind of this performative aspect of their music, too. So, that answers your question.
Any other questions? Okay, well, I have really enjoyed both of these papers really a lot, and I think it would be just terrific to find some of these things preserved in archives and used in the future. So, thank you all for coming. And hopefully we can talk over lunch if you're interested.
Thank you.